present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello, and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting scene in the Daily Mail's weekend TV guide, read by Charlotte Green.
BBC One, 11:15 p.m. Freddie Mercury, The Untold Story. Repeat.
Thanks to Andrew Lachlan for that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome, first on my right, Francis Ween and Mark Steele. Challenging them on my left, Alan Corran and Fred McCauley. Francis, who seems to have gone a little rusty?
Rusty?
Yes. Which metal do we associate with rust?
Well, quite a number. What are you on about? Rust. Well, I didn't. I assumed it would be one of the news stories in the week, you know, like Gordon Brown's...
Oh!
There you go.
What?
The Iron Chancellor.
Well, wasn't that hard,
this
was
is...
it?
Well, it was pretty hard. This is like something out of the AZ crossword. And the Observer, how does rusty fit into...
I'm afraid you're just going to have to accept these new working practices.
All right. Well, in reply to the question you didn't ask, this is Gordon Brown. He delivered something called a pre-budget report. So actually, it's a post-budget report, as far as I can see, because the budget was in April, so it's after the budget. And he did this budget in April, and he got all his sums wrong. And Blair then made him stay behind after school until he got them right. And he has now got them right, and he's come to the House of Commons and said that he's going to have to borrow an extra $20 billion over the next 2 years, or $30 billion over the next three, that sort of thing. The good news is, on the other hand, it's not his fault. It's all the fault of world trade, which is the excuse we all use with our bank managers when the overdraft limit is exceeded, I'm sure.
Start getting phone calls from a call centre at 8:15 every morning going, hello, it's Tina here. I'm afraid you're £20 billion overdrawn. Are you going to make a payment?
I didn't understand the rusty thing, though, Simon. I'm with Francis on this.
Iron Chancellor.
What
do they think of Gordon Brown in... What do they think of Gordon Brown in Scotland, Fred?
Well, we admire him greatly, and he's such a good politician that I think there are a few of us who would actually like him to come back up and help out back home, because our Parliament building is costing more and more and more. I mean, it was originally going to cost $40 million, and the latest estimate is $400 million. So for any of you that wondered what happened to the man that was the Channel Tunnel accountant, I can tell you, he's still working.
Gordon Brown has been transformed from Iron Chancellor to Tin Man this week after being forced to admit he's got his budget sums wrong. Shadow Chancellor Michael Howard accused Mr. Brown of adopting a Canute-like attitude, at least with Mr. Howard's weird accent. I hope that's what he was saying. Economists said a large shadow had been cast over the Chancellor's economic record, though this turned out to be just Anne Diamond walking past... Mark, one very much for you, because you're hot back from the brazier, aren't you? Who's been pouring oil on troubled fires?
Well, this could be an assortment of government ministers, I suppose, who keep telling the fire brigade union that they have to modernise. The politicians keep saying, you know, you really must modernise. And then they say this in this Gothic building that is officially opened once a year by a man in garters who bangs a black rod on a door and then walks backwards so that everybody could say, "Hear, hear, honourable member," as they stand around a mace. And so I suppose the idea that they're coming up with is that they want to modernise the fire service, presumably in the way that they've modernised other services, which means that the fire engine will turn up and you'll have to pay a top-up fee before they actually hose anything down. But it'll be modernised, so there will be a Starbucks on the back of every fire engine. So I suppose the fire service should be modernised the same way that that Parliament has been modernised, so that if you ring up with a 999 call, they say, well, apparently there's a fire, and everybody goes, oh, here, 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 and then they pledge to put out a white paper on the issue. And then about 6 months later, some civil servants start to put together a bit of a plan of how they're going to put the fire out, but then it never comes to anything because there's a second unelected fire service that it has to go to first, which is run by ancestors of 13th century firemen and Melvin Bragg.
There you go.
Well, but the answer to the question, who, is presumably Prescott, is it?
Yes.
The token Englishman in the government.
I think I've got this right. There was one interview last week where he was talking about the fire service, and I think what he said was, well, I mean, like, it was dumped on my lap, and I'm asking to be, why do you asking? And do you know, those stubborn firemen, they wouldn't even agree to that. No wonder they can't do a deal. If you agreed to anything Prescott said, you'd have agreed to put out a fire in three separate tenses at once.
And the one thing about him is that he's the one man in the room who doesn't get the joke, so everyone despises him. Tony Blair does, the firefighters do, they all do. And he's the one person who still thinks that he's regarded as this serious statesman who's going to sort it all out. Actually, he said this week that jobs would go as a result of the dispute, and his is almost certainly one of them, I should think, isn't it? with any luck.
The Sun had a big headline at the start of the strike that said, Blair does a Maggie. And he's obviously very proud of that, Blair. And I suppose the only thing is he's probably a little bit jealous, and he thought, yeah, but Thatcher didn't just defeat the union. She actually would shut down an entire workforce, and that's probably his plan. His next thing would be to produce a closure programme of fire stations and then try and shut down the whole lot, I suppose, and then wheel these firefighters angry, saying, there's enough flames in them warehouses for another three generations. We'd all have little yellow stickers saying, slide down a pole, not Dole. Not me, is it? Cut that out.
John Prescott said he has enough of striking firemen. He prefers hitting members of the public. Fred, which inspector has called?
There's only one. Well, there's a group of inspectors. Is it the weapons inspectors?
It is, yes. Hans Picks.
Yeah, and I think there have been a few installations now, and they're just wandering about like Sergeant Wilson from Dad's Army and saying, would you mind awfully telling us if that's a weapon of mass destruction? And if the Iraqis don't look shifty, they say, well, thank you very much. We're sorry to have troubled you. They should send in a two-year-old child, because they've never done that. What's that? 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 Didn't they go to... They went to some place and they said it was an animal vaccination factory or something like that. They just made biscuits. And I think, actually, if you're looking for chemical warfare, any food processing plant in the UK has probably got more chemicals.
The UN weapons inspectors have had a successful start to their programme, despite reports of bugging by the Iraqis. They're believed to be using a state-of-the-art eavesdropping device capable of picking up the smallest whisper and transmitting it instantly, codenamed Linda Snell. The UN team began to suspect they were bugged when they arrived unannounced at the first inspection site and were instantly served three lattes, a cappuccino and a mug of hot chocolate, just as you like it, sir. Alan, listen to this. Words don't come easy. For whom, Alan, do words not come easy?
Practically everybody. I mean, this could be Prescott, it could be Bush, it could be anybody else who mangles the language. You talking about Bush here?
No.
Oh, I'm shaken. Normally George Bush down this end by this time of night. Is it the young who are illiterate?
It is.
Well, that is no surprise to anyone. All the children in our schools can neither speak nor add up. There was a whole thing about how mathematics, we are the worst in Europe, and nobody can actually read anything, which is how we arrive at basically illiterate deputy prime ministers and innumerate chancellors of the Exchequer, just what you need to take you into the dark night of the soul that's awaiting all of us when Hans Blick screws up. It isn't any kind of surprising question at all. It's just the children in this country are not educated. That's the only way they can actually get into all the new universities we have, is by being illiterate and innumerate. Otherwise, they'll reach standards that are too high actually to get in.
You were saying about how the Scottish education system is so good. I mean, our newspapers at home said, words, big thing.
What?
I saw that there's a problem with I remember reading it, it said, problem with lighty racy. Literacy. I'll spell it out for you if you want.
Illiteracy, he doesn't know the meaning of the word.
An Ofsted report this week found that up to 200,000 7-year-olds cannot read and 50,000 cannot write. The figures would have been more, but children aren't any good at sums either. In a speech on adult illiteracy, the Education Secretary, Charles Clark, said, every day we pay people to go to work who can read like... who cannot read like an 11-year-old.
Every this is the day son of the man who wrote a book called The Uses of Literacy.
Every day we pay people to go to work who cannot read like an 11-year-old, which is why John Prescott has been so useless at brokering a deal with the FBU, etc. The shame. We start round two with a classified ad from Property Weekly.
Delightful rear garden comprises flower beds with a variety of mature plants and shrubs.
Thanks to Lincoln Bolsover for sending that in. It's a wonderful name, Lincoln Bolsover.
It's a village, isn't it? It's like Kirkley Ambrose or Courtney Walsh. Somewhere in Gloucestershire.
Francis, whose new idea should be taken at face value?
Yes, I did read about this. It was someone who was described as a top plastic surgeon. I don't know if there are bottom plastic surgeons as well, but there probably are. But this chap actually lived up to his billing because he's all about tops. He gave a speech saying that complete face transplants will be possible within, I think, 6 months, he claims. And this was reported as if it was news, that it's going to be a great breakthrough. In fact, they've been going on for years. As some of us know to our cost, after that awful incident in the Casablanca clinic I had with Ian Duncan Smith. But but anyway, they're getting made available to all very soon.
So I have to carry donor cards saying, in the event of my being knocked down by a 653 bus, I would like my face to go too. I'd have to think about that a bit. I've got one for the kidneys. I don't mind that. I mean, you can't recognise my kidney from somebody else. But I really want, you know, my face suddenly appearing in the Minor of Manor House in 40 years' time. My children are a bit of a shock to see their father coming back. I thought we'd buried him.
I mean, if you were hit by the bus, I mean, you'd have a certain expression on your face as well. So somebody's going to be walking about like... What if you're a male adult donor of a certain age, right, and you die at the point of, you know, physical entertainment with a lady?
No, it's only right? The face you're giving.
Well, but my face changes. You've got some poor donee walking about with that expression on his face. Oh! And I... Oh. Do you like my new coat? Oh! I commend this budget statement to the House.
Is that the expression that Scottish people make? At that
well, it's the
same expression they make for, oh, your tea's ready.
Well, it does usually have the word Kirsty involved as well. Oh, Kirsty. I'm ever so grateful. You're the most accommodating.
Plastic surgeon Peter Butler predicts that the first full face transplant could take place in Britain within the next 6 months. Psychologist Dr. Eric Sigmund said that the yuck factor might put people off new faces. Especially anyone who remembers this as a show that discovered Jim Davidson, Shawadi Wadi and Les Dennis. Fred, listen to this.
If you want this choice position, have a cheery disposition. Rosy cheeks, no warts.
That's the part I put in.
Play games, all sorts. You must be kind, you must be...
Fred, who's getting another O pair of hands around the house?
And we opening the doors to Eastern European young ladies of 16 years and above to come and live with us all. We're all getting one. I don't know if my kids... Have you had an au pair? Sorry,
not recently.
Did your family employ the services? Because I have to say that in all the things I've introduced to my marriage, pert-breasted European girls was never met with much favour with Mrs. McCauley. A family in Glasgow that employed an au pair from Denmark, and on the first night the missus was out of the house, the husband's sitting flicking through the channels, as is the husband's prerogative, and the new au pair came in, took the channels off him, right, took the remote control off him, sat down in the settee and started flicking through and said in their best Danish voice, "Do we have porno?"
And did they?
Of course, she was fired for taking the remote control.
The au pairs must be provided with basic food and lodging and an allowance of up to £45 a week. Conditions which News Quiz panellists can only dream about. These days, au pairs are all too often viewed as cheap labour. Common drudges forced to cook, clean, look after the children, subject to the ever-present threat of a sexual advance from the head of the household. Of course, when I was a boy, that's what wives were for. Alan, which organisation has discovered that business is a lottery?
The lottery. It is plummeting. It is going down its own tubes. It's losing money. No one really wants to go in for it anymore. Given the rest of life, with, you know, there's enough lottery with pensions, house prices, and all the rest. There's no point going and buying a ticket for the rest of them. I mean, given that everything is a gamble, then Camelot is up the spout.
Thanks to my fellow countryman, Billy Connolly, of course.
Why is he don't buy a little, buy nothing.
They've finally sussed out how ridiculous it is and how unlike you are to... The start used to get all these people with these schemes. And honestly, so many people saying things like, oh, I think number 23, because that hasn't been out for a few months, so that's due to come out. And think, right, that assumes that the little balls have a memory and B, a sense of fair play. And every week they're swizzling around. 17's there. Oh, I'll go, no, get back, let 23 out. It's been out since March. I lost sense of me months there.
28 pence of every pound spent on a lottery ticket goes to good causes, such as sports centres for young athletes, arts organisations, and keeping Christine Hamilton off TV. Before we start the final round, here's a property ad taken from the Somerset County Gazette.
A beautifully fitted two-bedroom flat within this sought-after development. Two bedrooms, secure underground parking, and 24-hour undertaker.
Thanks to Miles Gossers of Richmond for that. Francis, listen to this.
Wincy, wincy spider climbed up the water spout. Down came the raindrops and washed poor Wincy out. Out came the sunshine and dried up all the rain. And Wincy, wincy spider climbed up the spout again.
Francis, who had to wash the spider out of their shopping?
It's actually a rather scary story. It's like those old films about ants and bugs and swarms of killer bees. Turns out if you buy grapes, you'll be attacked by black widow spiders. Every day there are fresh horror stories of, you know, women taking their children to school and they had a little bag of grapes in the middle of the car that they pick at on the way to school, and suddenly the child picks this thing out and says, "Oh, look, what's this?" And it rears up and spits venom at them. It's a bit like looking in the shaving mirror and finding Ian Duncan Smith has come to stay. Terrible.
Incredibly blasé about it, though, Tesco's. They said, oh, well, it proves that we are using organic methods and not using pesticides, which is a bit blasé. My dad would have been like that, I think, if I'd said, oh, Dad, these grapes have got a black widow. He'd have just gone, well, eat round it.
Black widow spiders are potentially deadly to humans, and their venom is 15 times more potent than a rattlesnake. So, rather like Edwina Curry, but with more legs.
When they find them in Tesco's, do the women have to say, Mr. Simpson, Mr. Simpson, black widow, checkout number 9.
Mark, which builder got the hump this week?
Oh, this is a brilliant bloke. He was... There was a speed bump right outside his house, and he got fed up with all these sort of milk floats and lorries and things that every time they went over him, it made the sort of ka-ching, rattle, rattle, rattle noise of a vehicle going over a speed bump. And so he wrote to the council and went very formally through this whole process of complaining about the speed bump and the council being like a council, never even replied. And at one point he said, I'm going to dig this up myself. And he happened to be a builder who happened to have a JCB, so he went out and dug it up himself and cleared the whole speed bump away. Splendid chap. What annoys me about it, because people, you get the people who sort of get scared of the speed bumps, and they are irritating things. I know it probably serve a purpose, but they, you know, people get scared of them, and you get stuck behind these people that crawl. And you think, well, you can do about 20 miles an hour over speed bump, but you get these old people who drive with their hats on, still inside their car. And they go exactly in the middle of the road, or they see a leaf in the road and indicate to go round it. So top play to your JCB, man, I say.
After a month of sleepless nights caused by the sound of traffic bouncing over the speed bump near his house, Oxford builder Ian Beasley dug up the hump with the aid of a pneumatic drill. It's not just Mr. Beasley who had to suffer in this way. Women up and down the country know the awful effects that can be produced by a hump in the middle of the night. Fred, where was Britain's biggest fish supper to be found this week?
We've had some problems in Scotland with fish. Our fish stocks are exhausted. And, I mean, we haven't caught them all, they're just knackered. Chasing them. And the answer might be that... there's a shark in Cornwall. Which is... Just came to me there. There's been a huge shark found and caught, and it's big enough to feed 5,000 people if you've got loaves.
It is, actually 1,200 people. It's a thresher shark, which way of describing Norman Lamont, I suppose, those who remember those days. Who hangs around picking up women outside off licences.
It's quite tame,
it's a thresher shark. Tame, it's dead. It doesn't get any tamer than that.
When the oil tanker went down last week, there was a lot of sharks in that area, apparently. So it's probably come up away from there, thought, well, I better get out of the way of all this oil.
What a marine grasp you have.
He came up with...
I did a left up the Bay of Biscay, up the whatnot. Round the back of you, what, the one on the right, France, there you go, Cornwall, wallop, dead. That's what the cabbie said to go. Shark cabbies. Oh, bleeding hell. I'm not going north of Finnish there this time, am I? I feel sorry for it, because when there's no other ships, apart from oil tankers, seem to snap in half. Nothing else. So the sharks and all the jellyfish must be down there, and they see a boat about to snap in half, and they must think, oh, what's this going to be? Something fun, some furniture on the way from Sweden we can have a laugh with. I'm not oil again!
This week, two fishermen caught a 520-pound shark off the coast of Cornwall. The vessel skipper became alarmed when he saw, as he put it, a bloody great creature rearing out of the water. Even more alarmed when he realised it wasn't Anne Diamond. When it's been cut up, the shark is expected to provide 1,000 fillets, some driftwood, a small dinghy and Robert Maxwell. Alan, why are parrots mainly blue this season?
I think this one's about a parrot, isn't it?
It is.
Did you say something about a parrot?
I did.
There is a 13th century church somewhere, and a parrot is nesting. I don't know what they do, but it's perching, I suppose. Anyway, it's standing there, and it's whistling and cackling, and they're all really very pleased, and given the liberal move of the Church of England, I suppose it'll be ordained any minute now. I only have one parrot story that I really like. Man goes into a pet shop. And he says to the bloke behind, I'd like a parrot. In fact, I said, fine, we've got a lot of parrots here. So he said, got three over there. And there's a blue one, a green one, and a grey one. And he says, well, that blue parrot, how much is that? Oh, that's £500. He said, £500? That parrot can whistle all of the Toccata and Fugue. Said, really? So the bloke says, well, I think 500 is rather a lot for me. And he said, what about that yellow job next to it? And he said, yellow job is really mangy. And he said, oh, no, that one's actually £1,000. So he said, why? He said, well, that can do the whole of the Cole Porter song backwards. So I said, well, tell me about the one at the end, that thing at the end, that grey one with one leg and a walleye and all its feathers around the bottom of the perch. He said, how much is it? It's £25,000. It's £25,000. What can that one do? He said, I don't know, but the other two call it the master.
I an escaped African grey parrot named Charlie, who set up home in a West Yorkshire church tower, has caused offence by swearing and wolf-whistling at passers-by. When word spread that Charlie was in the bell tower, the church was inundated with visitors looking for Charlie. Angus Deaton, Liam Gallagher... Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, this is from the Daily Telegraph. It's a story from Germany. A German intelligence-gathering operation to uncover suspected terrorists and criminals went wrong after bills for phone-tapping services were sent to the people being bugged. German Federal Police last week sent an urgent warning to all regional police forces. They're checking records to ascertain who received the bills and whether they were aware of the eavesdropping.
Mark. Right, this is from Alan's paper, The Times. The Times Vet, a weekly column, I presume. I have kept chickens for the past 3 years. I have 15 Ross Cobb chicks, now 8 weeks old. They have a field run, good food, and can find all the things chickens need for a happy life. I want to slaughter them. I do have a hand-operated guillotine, but wonder if feeding them rum-soaked raisins a couple of hours before killing them would help them to leave life happy and relaxed.
Fred.
This is about a burglar found in study who was locked up. A young burglar who was caught red-handed in a Telford house has been sentenced to 21 months custody in a young offenders institution. He was discovered in the study by the householder, who caught and restrained him until the police arrived. He denied the offence during a trial at Shrewsbury Crown Court. He had claimed he had merely been using the house in Kingsley Drive during the early hours of June the 8th as a shortcut to get to the main road.
Alan.
It's from Northamptonshire Post, Simon. It says, following the hostile takeover of the Baxter's Butchers chain by meat giants Dewhurst, more than 100 staff have been axed.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final scores. Francis and Mark have 16 points, but Fred and Alan have quite a few more. And before we leave you, here's an item from a sign advertising a new Kentucky Fried Chicken outlet.
Wanted chickens. Immediate start. Cox need not apply.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Green, Mark Steele, Fred McCauley and Alan Horan. The chairman was Simon Hobbit and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Paul McKenzie and George Poles. And the producer was Simon Nichols.